There's so many library books in our schools and in our public libraries that are just filled with gender identity, and you wouldn't know it because they look like a picture book, right? It's a picture book about a teddy bear. It's in the elementary schools here in Davis. You know, we have 6 elementary schools. It's in, you know, 5 of the elementary schools, which means teachers have these books in their classroom, you know, starting in kindergarten. It's a picture book, but it tells the story of a teddy bear who, you know, finds out he's actually not a boy teddy bear. He's a girl teddy bear.
Hey, Joyful Warriors. This is Tiffany Justice of Moms for Liberty. Welcome to the Joyful Warrior podcast. Today, we are joined by a chapter chair, Beth Bourne of Yolo County, California. Beth is a champion for kids and has been fighting against radical gender ideology in the state of California for quite a few years now. And she's going to tell us a little bit about her story. So Beth, welcome to the Joyful Warrior podcast. We're so happy to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your family and about how you became so passionate about this issue.
Sure. Well, my story goes back about 5 years now. I have 2 children. My daughter is 18 and a half and my son is 16. And it was 2018, so my daughter would have been 14 years old. She was one of the, you know, I would say a group of junior high students who at around the same time all started identifying as transgender. And, you know, at the time I didn't know very much about this. It shocked me. And, you know, I think I did some things right along the way, some things I wish I could have done differently. But I, over the last 5 years, I feel like I've sort of become an expert on, you know, what's happening in our California schools or, you know, public schools across the nation, what's happening with the gender medical clinics and how pediatricians are interacting with our kids, and just all these issues around gender ideology. And I've just been so happy to become a part of Moms for Liberty over the last year because it's really helped me be an advocate, not only for my daughter, but for, you know, all these young people and kids that are being harmed by gender ideology.
So can you tell us, if you could share the story? I know there was a piece in the Sacramento Bee recently about your journey with your daughter. And could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. That was really, I think, it took my breath away. I mean, I had said to, you know, my partner, that my boyfriend, that we were going to have the story published in the Sacramento Bee. You know, I wasn't sure if it was going to be in the back of the newspaper or where, but I came home from a swim workout and I saw the newspaper sitting on my dining room table, and it was the entire front page of our newspaper and then a 4-page spread on the story. And in the headline, you know, I think it said, you know, how does an anti-trans mother become estranged from her daughter, or something to that effect? You know, how would gender ideology divide and fracture a family? And, you know, the piece, I think, of course, was biased towards my daughter. And I knew that when the reporter, you know, came to my house and spent a few hours interviewing me, that it would show it more from her side. But I think when you look through the photographs and you hear my story, you see that I protected her over these years, and she was able to, you know, basically desist and become comfortable in her her body as a young woman. So, you know, the piece in the Sacramento Bee, it just focused a lot on how, you know, where I have become an activist in our community, and where people have said to me that I'm being bigoted or transphobic, or, you know, calling me names and saying that I'm harming kids. But if you read through the story, you can see it more as a love story of a mother trying to protect her child.
So, I saw that. I have to say, I mean, the idea that you sheltered your daughter and protected her so that she didn't make irreversible decisions about her future is, I think, a hero's story. So I was thankful for the piece. I thought it was, I thought it was good and straightforward. And, you know, when I listen to a lot of the girls that have made decisions, with taking cross-sex hormones or puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, or have had gender surgeries, have had, you know, mastectomies like Chloe Cole. And I listen to the regret that they have, you know, will they ever be able to carry children? You know, will they be able to breastfeed their child? You know, what their life expectancy, right? All the different medical issues that detransitioners deal with that there really is no support system for. You saved your daughter. So, you know, she can be mad at you for a little while, but I still think that eventually she, you know, I think I actually saw pieces of that, you know, in the story that I think, you know, it was, I think it is a love story. So, California, you told me, when we spoke, you are an expert in three things, Kaiser Permanente and the gender clinic, the curriculum, the gender identity curriculum, across, California schools, and then, high school sports and, protecting girls' sports. And so I want to go through each of those things. I'm going to make mention the fact that, there were new Title IX regulations that were just, that have been proposed, that have just been, put into law. Basically, it's, it carries the rule of law, the Title IX regulations. And, it basically obliterates parental rights in our schools when it comes to these issues. And so, Beth, how did you become such an expert on the gender ideology instruction that is happening in the schools? Because as of Title IX right now, schools will be able to teach it and parents won't be able to opt their kids out.
So how did I become an expert on the curriculum? You know, I unfortunately became an expert after my daughter, you know, she was almost a senior in high school by the time I really was able to get all the information from our schools. But so my younger child, you know, he was in junior high school at the time, and I realized, you know, my daughter had been told by her school counselor and the teachers at her school that she could change her gender, right? So this happened in eighth grade. I got an email from her school counselor. This was 2018, 5 years ago, saying that my daughter would like to change her name at school and her pronouns. And, you know, would I be okay with this? You know, and of course, you're in this hostage situation, right? The school's telling you need to change your child's name. And if you don't, you know, they're, you know, your child might, you know, self-harm or so you're put in a position where everyone at the school is telling you this is what you need to do. And, you know, now I didn't even realize this, but the policy in California actually says school counselors and teachers can socially transition a child at school without even notifying the parents. So there's lots of examples here in Davis, California, where parents are not, don't realize that their child is actually.
I want to stop you for a second. You say lots of examples. There are people in America that will tell you this is not happening in our public schools. Is that maddening for you?
You know, it is. And then, you know, what I've been able to do is use social media to actually get the teachers to admit in writing, you know, and responding to my social media posts about my concerns. And they'll say, you know, I am a queer out teacher, you know, here in Davis, I teach sixth grade. I've got the flags in my classroom. I'm happy to use, you know, whatever pronoun or name a child has. And if I feel like the parents can't be trusted, I will support them with their gender identity in the classroom. So I have the actual, you know, written social media posts from teachers saying this is what they do in the classroom. And the school district, you know, has confirmed it. That's their policies. And that they love the fact these teachers have the flags in the classroom and the pronoun pins, and that they are transitioning these kids at school. And so that you know, that bothers me, of course, because I don't think parents realize that it's not a neutral act, or that it's you know, it's just a social transition, because we know it's the first step in a medical transition. And of course, anytime you tell a parent or a child that you will keep a secret from their parents, then it's setting the child up for all kinds of dangers. You know, once you say that other adults can be trusted, but not your parents.
So this is happening in Davis schools. This is happening in Washington State. This has been happening in a lot of places. But it's not happening everywhere. So these new Title IX regulations, this new Title IX rule, will now allow for this to happen everywhere, uncontested. Parents won't be able to opt their children out of gender identity instruction. So what does that look like for parents that, you know, right. So there's a couple things. The transitions are happening. What this Title IX rule says that is that the school can keep it a secret from the parents if they think that the parents won't affirm the child, if they think right. the parents are a harm to the child. And being a harm to your children at this point, parents, you need to understand, means that you're not affirming them, that you're not going to go along right. with their gender confusion. That makes you a possible harm to your child. Also, if you're religious, apparently that's a possible right. harm to your child. So want to be very clear so parents understand. So gender identity instruction in the classroom, starting at the age of kindergarten, and we know that's happening right. in some places, looks like what?
Right, right. So let me just kind of go through the places where you can see gender ideology being taught okay. in Davis schools, because it's the same that's happening in all public schools in California. And of course, it's going to be, if it's not already, you know, the same model they're using in Oregon and Washington State and Massachusetts, probably, you know, Pennsylvania, you know, all the blue states. And it's going to be what you see in all the red states, too. So what they've done now is it's coming really through the unions. So you have the American Library Association, you have the, you know, National Teachers Association. So these unions and you know, the larger Democratic Party are bringing in this ideology. So in the Davis schools, and of course, I didn't know this the first few years where my daughter was trans identified. It wasn't until I started doing public records requests. I actually sat in the classroom when my son was learning about gender ideology in his ninth grade health class. And I had friends who have younger kids get me the curriculum from the elementary schools. But what they've done is they've brought in this new gender ideology in the health classrooms, in the junior high school, in fifth grade puberty health. They've also brought it in the science books. So science in fifth grade and sixth grade in California, and the biology textbooks, the AP biology textbooks, have all been rewritten to say that humans have, you know, that the doctors make mistakes when they assign the birth, and that there's actually, you know, multiple genders, not just a male and female sex. So they're blurring all these lines between gender identity and human sex. So and for like my child, who's very gifted intellectually, you know, and at the time was more socially immature, intellectually mature, she would read things like this and think, oh, they're fact, right? They're in my science book. They're in my health
classroom.
Why
wouldn't a kid believe that it's fact?
Right, exactly.
I mean, we should be teaching fact in school.
Right. And my daughter was such a voracious reader. You know, she was reading three or four levels ahead. So she would spend her lunchtime in the school library, and she would check out these books. And I didn't know until later that there's so many library books mm-hmm. in our schools and in our public libraries that are just filled with gender identity. And you wouldn't know it because they look like a picture book, right? It's a picture book about a teddy bear. It's in the elementary schools here in Davis. You know, we have six elementary schools. It's in, you know, five of the elementary schools, which means teachers have these books in their classroom, you know, starting in kindergarten. It's a picture book, but it tells the story of a teddy bear who, you know, finds out he's actually not a boy teddy bear. He's a girl teddy bear. There's other books where they talk about, you know, preschool kids wanting to use the opposite bathroom, and that, you know, the other children have to accept that they want to use this new bathroom because they've changed from a boy to a girl. Anyways,
that's why social emotional learning, folks. That's why they have to destabilize the child, because the children know that the boys go in the boys' room, the girls go in the girls' room, and use right. the bathroom separately. So in order to be able to accept the impossibility that a boy could possibly be a girl and they could go into the bathroom with them, they have to be conditioned to, right. to accept that. That's what social emotional learning is. It's a conditioning mechanism, a programming mechanism. Sorry, Beth, I just have to.
No. And the whole programming idea, you know, so one of the things that really tipped me off to what was happening was when my son was given a survey in his eighth grade classroom where he needed to, it was called the Youth Truth Survey. And, you know, when I asked the principal because now I'm concerned. Can I see the survey? She said, well, you can go onto their website and you'll see something there. Well, it didn't have all the questions, right? It just said, you know, these are the typical questions. And I said, can I come in and, you know, actually, can you email me the survey? No, we won't email it to you. And I said, well, I am not going to let my son take a survey unless I can see it. And so I demanded after a few days to come in, and she made me sit down with a laptop. And she said, well, you can't take any photos of the survey. But I did anyways, right? I took screenshots and I saw what they were asking my son is, you know, describe, it was like a demographic question. Are you a boy, a girl, something else, or transgender? And then the next question said, you know, if you're transgender, are you non-binary, or do you think you might be transgender? So these are all leading questions, right? Sure. And, you know, most parents have no idea their children are being asked this. So I did ask Colin Wright to help me. I did some public records requests. And Colin Wright is a, you know, he's an evolutionary biologist, has his PhD in this field. And he's been really, you know, gender critical scientist who basically kicked out of academia because he believes in science and biological truth. But he did some analysis of these surveys. And we have one of the, you know, highest percentage of trans identified kids in the state, and 400% higher than the average in the U.S., right? So there's obviously, if you're presenting this material, you have the flags in the classroom, you've got the library books, you know, you've changed the science curriculum, you're going to see more and more children think that, oh, I'm uncomfortable with my body, I don't really fit in with the, you know, the popular girls, or I'm, you know, a feminine boy. It's really easy to see how, you know, you would get larger and larger numbers. And then you have the social contingent. And so you see the big clusters here in Davis in different groups, you know, in the theater groups, in the choir, in robotics, you know, anywhere you get very, I want to say, gifted young people, many on the autism spectrum. And then there's a social contingent, right? It becomes their special interest within the group.
But let's stop for a second. I want to talk about this as moms for a second. Okay. So I saw someone sent me something from the North Carolina Gifted Association, an association to support gifted students. They were talking, they said something like in this webinar that 1 in 2 of the kids in the gifted program identify as LGBTQIA+. 1 in 2.
Right.
So why is it that these children who are the best and the brightest in academics,
right,
are right, smart kids, are looking yes, for this release, are looking for this identity. Right. What is it about our culture that creates the need for a very, very smart child to need and want this type of, I want to say like identity, I guess, is the best word that I can think of to use for it.
Right. Well, so my daughter, you know, she's a National Merit Scholar, right? And that's, you know, 1% of the population, you know, almost perfect SAT score, perfect math. And, you know, I have another friend, her son, also National Merit Scholar. And she said at their high school, I think there were 8 boys who are National Merit Scholars, you know, 4 of them are trans identified. So there's definitely this connection between very gifted, you know, kids, teenagers who believe, well, you know, I'm not comfortable in my body, so I must be the opposite sex. And I have a feeling it's because they're such deep thinkers, right? So when they're hanging out with their, you know, the other girls or the other, you know, typical boys, they might not fit in very well. And so then it's like, why do I not fit in well with this other group? It must be because, you know, I'm the opposite sex. So it gives them, yeah, it gives them an excuse rather than saying I'm a weird, quirky girl, I must be a boy. And then you have a way to, an excuse for maybe being awkward, right? It's because I don't need to be a girl awkward anymore, I get to be a boy.
We need to bring awkward back. I mean, I was exactly incredibly awkward. Like, I just, you know, I think about all the time, I think, my goodness, what do they think puberty is supposed to be? I've yet to meet a woman who is like, yes, oh, puberty was great, I felt like I was blossoming, exactly, to this amazing woman. No.
Right. No. Yeah. Laura, is it Brecker? She's, you know, one of the detransitioners, and she writes about this, you know, typical, very gifted, bright, quirky, creative, sensitive, sympathetic girl who wants to identify as a boy. And I see it all the time. You know, it's just, it's a very easy way to get through these hard years of puberty is to say, I'm not a girl, I'm going to be a boy. And you get to erase that awkward girl and become this new person. And it's very alluring or seductive, right? When you're this awkward 13-year-old girl.
I've said this in other podcasts. I've said, like, yeah. I remember I came out as a vegetarian at the age of like 12. And then I told everyone I was a vegetarian. And then I changed my mind. Right. And it was like really embarrassing to start eating meat again. So I can't imagine if you go to a school and you decide that you want, you know, oh, I'm not really a girl, I'm a boy, or vice versa. And then all of a sudden, you know, to walk that back within a school environment has got to be very difficult. I think it would be very hard. There's you mentioned it before, the idea of the social transition being something that's just being nice and using the pronouns that the kid wants and the name that they want. It's not nice. It does lead them down the path of going to medical transition. And so Beth, you said you were an expert at Kaiser Permanente. That is the location where Chloe Cole, one of the clinics, gender clinics that Chloe Cole went to, and they removed her healthy breasts at the age of 15, I believe. Americans, I know you keep saying, people keep saying this isn't happening. I see you on Twitter in my feed. Oh, this doesn't happen. Gender reassignment surgeries don't happen for minors, for kids. No, they do all the time. And so you're, tell us about Kaiser Permanente.
Right. You know, actually, you mentioned Chloe Cole's lawsuit. I got a notice from a friend today. I'm part of that lawsuit. Uh-huh. So one of the declarations in the lawsuit is my story when I went undercover as a non-binary patient to get gender-affirming care at Kaiser. And I'll talk about that in a second. But so the reason why I really wanted to push back on Kaiser is because when my daughter was 14 and she had come out at school as being, you know, this trans-identified boy, my ex-husband was affirming with the pronouns. And we were at a Kaiser visit for my daughter. She was having dizziness spells. So nothing to do with gender. We were there because she wasn't feeling well at school. And when the pediatrician overheard my, you know, her father using the he, him pronouns, she looked at my daughter and said, wow, I hear your father referring to you, you know, as he, can I help you? Can we, you know, change your name or your pronouns here? And right there in front of me, she changed my daughter's records at Kaiser to say she uses he, him pronouns and is, you know, a trans boy. And then she had told my daughter that she should go to the Kaiser gender clinic in Oakland. It's called the Proud Clinic. And she said in front of my daughter and me and my ex-husband that it's a one-stop shop where you can meet with endocrinologists, gender specialists, an OBGYN, and we have all this gender-affirming care that we can offer you. And this was my daughter, you know, this has been just a few weeks. She was 14. I was still trying to take this in. And I was livid. I called the pediatrician a couple days later and I said, how could you do this, you know, to our family? We hadn't talked yet with what we're going to do with any kind of, you know, medical transition. And now you've just put this idea in my daughter's head that there's all these services out there and that they could be safe. So I did fortunately get a little bit of research through Will Malone. He's an endocrinologist. And then there was also, this was 2018, so there's very few online, like, you know, places where mothers or parents could get information. But there was enough out there that I said to my daughter that, you know, I will let you, because her psychiatrist recommended this, use the pronouns, but we will not do anything medically until you're 18. And I think that's a really good lesson to tell parents is that your child actually will appreciate the fact that you give them this line, you know, that nothing will happen till you're 18, because then they can tell their friends, hey, I tried, you know, my parents, you know, whatever, they let me wear my hair short, but you know, they said nothing till I'm 18. And so they don't look like that, you know, that they're not courageous or not true trans. It's the parents that look like, you know, the bad guy. So so I was lucky. My daughter agreed to that. And then, you know, over this 5 years, which is, it's a really long arc, she outgrew this identity. And I'm just so thankful that I didn't do anything. I didn't put her on period blockers. I didn't put her on testosterone. I trusted my gut feeling as a mother and said, you know, you will become a guinea pig for this medical experiment that's going on. And I won't allow this.
So you're talking about parenting this issue like any other issue you would parent that your kid deals with. Generally, Little John, another mom whose daughter was socially transitioned at school, has talked about that extensively, right? You know, trust your instincts, parent this issue if, just like you would your child dealing with any other type of mental distress. And it's important. And there are resources now, Beth. Before we end this podcast, I'm going to ask you to share some of the best resources. If there is a mom or dad who's struggling with this issue with their child, you started talking about, we want to talk about gender affirming care. And I use quotation marks around that because it's nothing affirming about gender affirming care. As we talked about puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, sex reassignment, gender reassignment. I mean, the Mengele style, a horrible experimentation, just the experimentation happening on kids is absolutely awful. And if you don't believe us, please go online right now and look up vaginoplasty or phalloplasty. Look at some of the surgeries that are being done on some of these children, making fake penises or fake vaginas. And it is just horrifying what is happening in the medical issues that the detransitioners deal with trying to, you know, get their lives back after puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, even if they didn't do the reassignment surgeries, is a long and hard road. And you should read their stories too. Recently, there was a review done about gender affirming care. And Beth, I want you to tell us a little bit about the CAS review and what that is, is what parents should be taking from some of the new information and the studies that are being done regarding whether or not gender affirming care is really good for kids.
Well, maybe before I get into the CAS review, I just want to mention what I did for my own sanity. And so I could become, you know, what I believe is an expert on this, is I did some undercover work. I actually told Kaiser, you know, my primary care physician, that I was non-binary and that I wanted to have these treatments done. And, you know, even though I'm a 54-year-old woman with two kids, I was able to prove to myself, and, you know, we've had some really good the story was written and Colin Wright was able to share it. And I think it had, you know, 3 million views. So the story's been out there, right? That I was able to, within just a matter of a few months, have my doctor, within an hour, she changed my pronouns. She marked on my medical record I was non-binary. You know, in 15 minutes, I was able to get a prescription for testosterone pump, a $5 copay. Within, you know, 2 visits, I was able to get a approval for my top surgery, you know, a radical bilateral mastectomy, and these appointments were all done online. They were all done over Zoom. So if you're, you know, a young person, 18-year-old girl in college who thinks she might want top surgery because having her breast removed will make her feel, you know, safer or more comfortable, or, you know, there's lots of reasons you'd want to, you know, not have to be a woman, especially with porn right now. So I think I was able to show in just, you know, 2 appointments, $100 copay, I got approval to have this non-binary top surgery done. And then I was able to have the Kaiser doctors make an exception for me. And they gave me approval for a phalloplasty, which is they take either the tissue of my, you know, forearm or my thigh to create this fake penis, a phallus. And, you know, depending on what donor site you use, the penis is either, you know, anyways, it's so hard to believe. And I had to look at all these slides and videos and go to workshops. But in 2 appointments, I also got approved for phalloplasty. And, you know, my copay is $200 for that surgery. But the surgeon will, it's $100,000 surgery. And so that means all of these Kaiser members, you know, and anyone who belongs to this HMO, they're paying in for this this medical, it's not medical care, right? It's cosmetic surgeries that are actually, you know, harming bodies for the rest of their life. And, you know, Kaiser's making huge profits off this. And, you know, it's, I think it's medical fraud, you know, medical scandal, what's happening, medical malpractice. And I have the receipts or the records, right? I've proven it myself. I gave them all these red flags, you know, of why they should have been giving me mental health to figure out why I was uncomfortable with my body. But instead, they're happy to prescribe these cross-sex hormones and surgeries. So anyways, I have that undercover piece. And now that brings us
where
to
can
this,
people,
you know.
If people want to read that piece, where can they go?
You know, Colin Wright, he has a Substack called Reality's Last Stand. And I've also put it on my own Substack. You know, I have a Twitter account too, where people can go to it. But yeah, if you type in Beth Bourne, non-binary Kaiser, it'll come up, the story.
So Beth, there's a lot of progress that's being made on this issue of gender ideology or gender affirming care, debunking gender affirming care. And it's really interesting because right now I feel like we're in the middle of these like two tidal waves that are meeting. You have the Title IX regulations that have been released, where you have the weight of the federal government, right, changing the protected class of sex to include gender identity and sexual orientation. You have the federal government that's going to now give government schools the ability to lawfully keep secrets from parents regarding gender identity. And yet at the same time, we are seeing advances in the review of gender affirming care. We're seeing that people are saying, wait a second, what is the standard of care here? What should it be? You know, and in Europe, you're seeing many countries that are shutting down gender identity clinics, their gender clinics. And there's new information that is coming forward every day of research to say, are kids better off when they receive this gender affirming care? Because one of the things, and I know you shared that I saw something on your Twitter of a teacher who got up and said that, you know, her child said they were going to kill themselves unless they transitioned. And you said, right. You know, this poor mother that, you know, was told this lie that her child would kill themselves if she didn't put them on drugs and harm them for the rest of their lives. Right. It's just such a betrayal, right? And so you have these two things that are kind of like meeting at the weirdest way, with the federal government pushing down, but research and science and fact,
right,
and medicine, yes, pushing back up. And I think they're going to meet, and man, it's going to be quite a clash. And so tell us, what's the latest research regarding the efficacy and of gender affirming care?
And this is something I bring up all the time, is that, you know, we know in these European countries, so Finland and Norway and France and Sweden, you know, other countries, that they're halting all pediatric medical transition. And you know, the big news was this CAS review. So Dr. Hilary Cass is a pediatrician in the UK, and you know, she's able to show through all this evidence that there is no benefits from transitioning kids, and so they're no longer prescribing puberty blockers in the UK right now. So that's huge, right? We've got this example here in Europe of this, you know, long term studies and this proof that there is no benefits shown from affirming kids with these cross-sex hormones. And so we're asking now here in the United States, there's, you know, several organizations, for us here in America to look at what's been done, and that we should be asking for the same thing, right? This should not be a political issue. This should be something where we agree together that we should protect our kids and vulnerable people from this medical scandal.
Absolutely. And so one of the questions that's been asked, and I think it's really the onus is on American parents to ask groups like the American Academy of Pediatrics, like, have you read the CAS review? You know, here's a four-year study that's showing that gender-affirming care, the standard of care that you're recommending, is not what is best for kids. What are you going to do about that, AAP? Parents, you need to write a letter right now. Go to the AAP's website, American Academy of Pediatrics, and look up the board of directors and look for the executive director and send them an email and ask them, have you reviewed the CAS review? What is the statement of the AAP? Will you have a public statement? We expect a public statement. Are you going to change the standard of care that you are recommending? Because they may have a very small executive board, but they have lots of doctors across the United States, lots of pediatricians who are feeling the weight of the recommendation of the AAP to transition children. And right. So we need to, I think, Beth, you know, let's talk about this for a second. Are we pushing hard enough in America on these medical associations, on these institutions to have to answer to this new data that we're seeing?
You know, we're not pushing hard enough. And I think that's, we really need to do that, not because of your, you know, political party, but because you are, you know, or a mother or father who wants to make sure that your child won't be harmed now while they're a young person in your home, but also when they get to college, because that's where kids are getting hit. As 18-year-olds, you know, you're in the dorms, you're uncomfortable, and all of a sudden, all these, you know, medical services are being offered to you. So I think anything we can do as parents to write to these institutions, so not only the American Academy of Pediatrics, AAP, but the American Medical Association and the Endocrine Society, right? You know, that they're the ones that are doing the puberty blockers and the cross-sex hormones. So,
and just to be clear, parents, yeah. The other thing, Beth, I think is important is parents are not told the truth about the harms of puberty blockers, of cross-sex hormones. So can we just, for parents that are maybe hearing about this for the first time, I know a lot of our moms at Moms for Liberty know, but what are the long-term harms of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones for kids?
You know, I did, well, you know, when I did this undercover work with Kaiser, I really did look closely into how testosterone will affect, you know, a young woman or a teen girl. And testosterone, you know, it'll take 5 to 10 years of life, you know, take off 5 to 10 years of life off of a person's lifespan. So, right? So right there, you're taking 10 years of your life away by taking this unnecessary, you know, drug treatment. It also permanently affects a woman or a teen girl's voice and her hair. So you'll never get back your full head of hair, or take away that, you know, facial hair. Your voice will never go back to, you know, the pitch of a woman's voice. It also has higher risk for liver cancer. You know, and puberty blockers, they affect, of course, your brain development, your bone density, you know, all these things that a healthy young person would go through when they go through puberty. You would never want to block someone's puberty. It's just, to me, it's child abuse.
Write those emails, folks, really. Write to the American Academy of Pediatrics. Ask them if they're going to update their policies, because there's new evidence that shows that gender-affirming care after a long study isn't good for kids. And the fact that you go into the pediatrician's office and the doctor wants you to leave, so they can ask private questions of your child. You know, parents, we've told you, we will tell you again, do not let your kids fill out the surveys. Do not leave the doctor alone with your child. You have to be your child's advocate here, because unfortunately, there's a lot of bad information that the medical institutions across the United States and medical professionals have regarding gender-affirming care or gender ideology. And Title IX is not going to make that easier for us. So we're going to have to really, you know, stand our ground. Beth, I want to talk to you about your work in advocacy as a Moms for Liberty chapter. I know you've done a lot of community awareness. Our mission statement is unify, educate, empower. And once you bring people together for events or for, you know, even in your chapter, and then you educate them on the issues, you empower them to become active. Right? And to be effective. And so can you tell us a little bit about some of the work you've done in Yolo County? Because I know you've had a bit of a win for the movement recently.
That's right. You know, it started small. So I when I first joined Moms for Liberty, I met a few women here in Davis and our surrounding communities that I would never have met without joining Moms for Liberty. And one of the women came up with the idea to do a Brave Book Story Hour. And I had not heard of maybe heard of Brave Book, but you know, I got to read more about Kirk Cameron and get an understanding of what it would be like to do a Brave Book Story Hour here at our Davis Library. So that was our first Moms for Liberty event, and you know, the immediate pushback was the library staff and the trans activists in town wanted to hold a drag queen story hour because they were so threatened by our Brave Book story hour. So that was the first event. Our second event was we had a film screening of a detransitioner film. And again, you know, the trans activists showed up. Our third event was Colin Wright. You know, he flew out from Tennessee. He came to Davis. He spoke about, you know, the binary of science, of biology. And we looked at the curriculum in our school books and our science books here in Davis. And then our fourth event was, we did a book curation of event, you know, to really show what the library books look like here in Davis. And then our fifth event was the Protect Girls Sports. And that was in August. And at that event, I think the trans activists felt like they needed to stop what was happening, where we were having these events every month. And so they had the library staff actually shut down our event because they said we were misgendering when we were referring to men in women's sports by calling them biological males or males. They wanted us to refer to them as women, because the librarian said trans women are women. And, you know, I think we had Kim Jones from Icons at the meeting, Aaron Friday from Our Duty. She's an attorney. There was a couple attorneys in the room. And we just, we had our event shut down, but we were fortunate. Alliance Defending Freedom contacted us and they took on a lawsuit. And, you know, it's just been wonderful to have the support of the, you know, the attorneys with Alliance Defending Freedom helping us with that. And
so I'll jump in here for a second, yeah, if I could. Yeah. So Alliance Defending Freedom has been a wonderful partner in helping us across the United States of America and certainly engaging in this issue. This issue was interesting because while you were talking about women's sports and protecting women's sports at this event, it really was a free speech issue. It was a First Amendment issue, right? The right of people to receive the information that you were sharing and the right that you had to share that information. And so I've seen Reddit threads where people talk about wanting to shut down Moms for Liberty meetings, what they can do, stink bombs, fire alarms, just, I mean, like children, honestly, because they have no good argument. So they, you know, won't allow us to share the truth. But because this was a free speech issue, we reached out also to Institute for Free Speech, Alan Gura, who worked co-counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, Tyson Langhofer. And I'll just say thank you to ADF, to Institute for Free Speech for being such amazing partners and stepping up and helping us to navigate, because you got a pretty good settlement, a pretty big settlement for a library to have to pay on this issue. And I think they, do you think they learned their lesson? So tell us, what was the outcome?
So, you know, I don't think it's been announced officially yet, but the outcome will be that, you know, each of the speakers, there were five of us, we were the plaintiffs, and, you know, Moms for Liberty was the organizing group. It'll be a $5,000 cash to each of us. And then the, you know, the attorney fees for Alliance Defending Freedom.
So I think it's like a $70,000 settlement. I think it's important just to understand that not only that, but they had to go and revise their code of behavior. And that was important. They had to let you hold another event, which you did hold that event, didn't you, Beth?
Right. It was just, I think, last weekend and or a week and a half ago. And it was a fantastic event. You know, we had the library staff do an introduction and they reminded everybody that the library is not there to control speech, right? That we should all have this freedom of speech and that, you know, that, well, what we want to have is a diversity of viewpoints too. And so they did the introduction and we just had a wonderful event where we could really share what's happening, you know, across the U.S. to girls in high school, younger girls and college athletes, you know, professional athletes, where we're destroying sports. And so, you know, for women and girls. And it was great to be able to have a second chance to do this event and to, you know, live stream it and share it. And I think that's, you know, really important message is that, they're trying to silence, you know, women and parents who are speaking up on this. And I'll just quickly say, you know, I had a restraining order. I was served with a restraining order a few months ago because I spoke up at my son's high school about the flags and just my concerns. And so, you know, Harmy Dillon Law Firm, they represented me on that restraining order. And of course it was withdrawn after a few weeks because, you know, our school district, they knew they were in the wrong.
The process
of course,
is
I have a right
pain.
As a parent.
It's not whether or not, that's what people don't understand. On our side, I think we would say, like, well, that won't work, so we won't do it. But the process is the pain. That's what they want.
Yes, yes. So I just want everyone to know we have truth on our side and that you should never, never be afraid to speak out. And you will, they will try to silence us, they will try to intimidate us. But, you know, there's a lot of attorneys and law firms that are, they're experts on free speech. And, you know, what we're saying is, and I think that's why, you know, the restraining order was served on me, right? They don't want me to be speaking out.
And they want to scare other people. They want to,
exactly.
It's not even about you. It's about making sure that everyone knows to make an example of you. And so that they can chill speech and shut other people out. And, you know, unfortunately, that's what they're doing. But you're right. The truth is on our side. Stopping the natural, healthy development of a child is bananas. That is absolutely craziness. And the fact that we're doing it time and time again, and we have government schools that are setting children down this path for parents to pick up the pieces, by the way, because after Chloe Cole cuts off her breasts and detransitions and has to grapple with the decisions that she made in her life, guess who picks up those pieces? Her family, her parents, her brother, not the teachers, not Kaiser Permanente that set her down that path. It's the family. And so we are seeing this active wedge being driven between the parent and the child. I'm so thankful, Beth, that you are such a champion. And we need champions in California because truly you are the canaries in the coal mine. You are the state that is, if people want to know what does Title IX look like when it's instituted all over the United States of America, the new regulations, look at California. They'll drug your kids up. They will take them away. They will say that you're a harm. They won't let you speak to them. Abigail Martinez and her story of her daughter, Yaley, that happened in schools. She lost custody because she wouldn't affirm. And her daughter committed suicide. And separating parents and their children, there's just no future for America in that. So thank you for being such a brave warrior, Beth. We're so proud to have you be a part of Moms for Liberty and to fight shoulder to shoulder with you.
Thank you. Thanks. It's a pleasure.
Wonderful. So how can people follow you, Beth, if they want to, you know, see what you're up to, what you're talking about, if they want to know what the biggest issues are as far as gender ideology and how we're fighting back in America, you can follow Beth where? It's at born_Beth2345. So BORNE _BETH 2345. So follow Beth on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter @ForTiffanyJustice, Moms for Liberty. Where else, Beth? Where can they read your Substack?
But you know, I really suggest Reality's Last Stand too, is where the Kaiser undercover
Colin's
piece
great.
Is.
Colin's great. So go to Reality's Last Stand, Colin Wright. Read Beth's piece there on his Substack about when she went undercover at Kaiser Permanente. And man, I mean, you are just a joyful warrior. I'm watching, looking at you right now. You're smiling away. And we're like really in the fight for the future of our country and the health and safety of our kids. So thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you.